Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, coming up around 12:40 today, I'll bring you an interview with Dr. Jeffrey Bland on his new book, The Disease Delusion. Dr. Bland is a biochemist and a leading medical resource on functional medicine. In the course of his work, get this, he's flown no less than 6 million miles around the world, meeting with medical and science experts. He's also mentored some of America's most notable doctors, including Dr. Mehmet Oz, Joel Fuhrman, and Mark Hyman. But first, I'm very pleased to say that we're joined by someone who created an idyllic life with her husband, city girl turned farmer and student of wine growing, raising their three children in country bliss. That is, until a tragic turn of events turned her world upside down. Paula Moulton joins me to share how she overcame adversity to thrive once again and follow her dreams. I love this story, and I'm very pleased to have Paula with us today. She's the co-founder and CEO of A Sip Away. She's a viticulturist, award-winning winemaker, and has over 25 years of experience working with some of the best talent in the wine industry. Paula's appeared on CNN, NBC, and many other media outlets as an author and wine authority. And she's the author of Seasons in the Vine. Paula Moulton, welcome.
Thank you.
So what I didn't share, Paula, was that you were one of 20 students invited to spend a year in France and studying wine management. And we'll get into that shortly. But I want to just go back to the beginning, if you will, of you're living this idyllic lifestyle. You were a city girl. So tell us, first of all, why you decided, you and your husband, to buy land and go farm.
Okay, so we were living in San Francisco, and that was about 10 years ago. And I have a rhetoric degree from Berkeley, and he was in residency, medical residency. So we decided that we wanted to get out of the city and move into the country. And I had always had this passion for wine and for grapes and for farming, and I had kind of grown up around that with my parents. And, you know, in the 70s when they were into wine and nobody else was. So I thought, you know, typical to my adventurous whatever, I decided, you know, I'm going to, when he's done with his residency, we're going to move up to Santa Rosa in the wine country area, and I'm going to go back to school and study viticulture. So that's how it all started in the early 90s. And we looked for land, and I got involved. And, you know, a lot of the people in the wine industry are second and third or even fourth. You know, in France, of course, they're eighth or ninth generation
right,
wine people.
Right.
And so I was really a newbie, but, you know, I found that in a lot of ways that was positive for me. It didn't really hold me back, but I had to learn how to drive a tractor, and I had to learn how to prune a lot of grapevines and a lot of studying and learn about all the bugs and all the ways to treat things. And, you know, when I first got into it, it was more, I was really taught more of a traditional, what we say, you know, synthetic farming. So people were still spraying and doing things like that. So I got another bee in my bonnet about wanting to go organic. So the book then that I wrote, you know, 10 years ago was really a memoir. And then at the end of the book, I tell people, you know, how to grow grapes and make wine at home. You know, just grow 20 grapevines and you can have 50 bottles of wine. So that was a struggle to get the publishers to take notice of that style, because they said, no, you can write a memoir, you can write a technical book, but you can't do both. So that was a bit of a war for me, but in the end I won. And you know, then tragically my husband, when my first book was released, 3 days before it was released, he was killed in a car accident.
Yeah, and what a time to happen.
I
mean, you don't want that to happen at any time, but, you know.
Nope. And fortunately, he did get to see the book before, and he was so overwhelmed with it, and I just so adored it that, you know, that's one of the things that I have always taken with me, is that he did see the book. And so, you know, I took over his medical practice for a couple of years. I had to deal with patients and things like that, which was totally not my training. So, really, I got out of I sold all the grape land. We at that point had about 60 acres, and I sold all the land and really just took care of my three kids. And I started flipping the real estate property to, you know, make a living and put them through college. So when my third child went off to college, I went to France, and that was in 2011 with the 20 other students. Actually, the program wasn't the oldest. The ages were ranging from about 22 to 60, and from 14 different countries, so wow. Finland and Russia and Australia and Britain, and, you know, it was such an amazing experience with all these people in one room from all these different cultures. And of course, the classes were taught in French. We had an English translator, but after 10 months, you know, of full time, 30 hours a week, everybody was pretty fluent.
Right. And I'm going to interrupt you there because we need to take a quick break, all right? And I want to come back and go into this in a little bit more detail. We're talking today with Paula Malton in this segment. Her book is called Seasons Among the Vines, Life Lessons from the California Wine Country and Paris. And there's lots more to tell. So please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
This is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live, asking you to please go to 1150kknw.com and complete the 2014 listener survey. Your confidential responses help me and other hosts produce the kind of programming you prefer. As a thank you for providing feedback, your name will be entered to win a trip for two to majestic Victoria, BC. So please go to 1150kknw.com and tell us what you'd like to hear more of.
Coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Tina Welling on developing a creative partnership with nature, and Seattle's New York Times bestselling author Steve Martini shares a peek into a special project with some of America's most famous writers. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on KKNW AM 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Paula Malton. Her book is called Seasons Among the Vines, Life Lessons from the California Wine Country and Paris. And there are a lot of lessons in here that Paula learned. So I want to talk to them, to her a little bit about that. So Paula, you shared your story there, you know, about losing your husband, selling the farm, etc., and then deciding to go to Paris. But I'm just wondering, you know, what in you, because it's a very significant thing to lose your husband, lose, you know, the father of your three children. What was it in you that got you through that time focusing on your kids, and what was it that kept you going?
Well, I think that what really kept me going in hindsight was that the lessons I learned in farming really taught me about life. So the book has a lot of philosophical things going on in there, such as be open to change, there can be a life lesson at any time, I look forward now and not backward, just as nature does, learn from your mistakes, fear the known, never fear the unknown. Those things were in the book, and a lot of people after said, well, wow. I mean, so I ended up using the book almost as a tool or a guide, a spiritual guide for me to cope with the loss and get through each day and, you know, move forward with my children. And, of course, you know, on those rough days, just looking into their eyes would make me believe the reason why I was here. So right, that always right. kept me going. But, you know, following the seasons, following all the things that I had been taught really about nature and life, and as Aristotle says, nature does nothing uselessly. So if we kind of look outside us, there are a lot of things to learn, and a lot of that is in the book. A lot of people call it a philosophy book because there are so many life lessons that you learn, not just about grapes, you know, per se. So that's really how it started, you know, my own manual, I guess.
So what point, we all have turning points in our life, you know, when we look back and think, boy, that was a really significant turning point. What would you say following that period or during that period was a significant turning point for you?
So really over the last 10 years, I think you're asking. You know, I just think that I got comfort from talking to other people and knowing that other people had lived through things that I had. And I got very involved with a nonprofit that takes care of kids who have lost a parent or a close family member. And my children had actually attended that program, and then now I'm board president. So, you know, I moved forward with the process, with art therapy and all these things. So it was a really long process to get through. As far as an actual, you know, epiphany moving moment,
right.
I can't say I really had that. I think I just went from day to day, and I picked up these things that I learned along the way. And also, I think, you know, when you suffer a great tragedy, for me and for a lot of people, it's very cathartic to actually step outside and help the other people who are going through the same thing that you do.
Yeah.
Or that you have gone through.
Yeah. So at what point did you decide you wanted to go to Paris? How did that come about for you, Paula?
Well, so I got married last summer, okay, and so I met my now husband about a little less than a year before I actually went to Paris. And, you know, I feel quite blessed to have met someone that I can share the rest of my life with now. But at that moment, you know, I didn't know whether I should leave or stay, but I wanted to kind of go back into the wine business. I had lost all my land, and I'd sort of lost my passion, you know, not all my passion for wine and farming and all that, but I felt like, you know, I need to jumpstart that passion that sort of disappeared over those years with all the hard work and et cetera. So,
yeah, understandable.
Yeah, so that's what happened. And, you know, fortunately, he supported me in it. And we got engaged before I left. And he lived through the whole year with me going back and forth. And then we got married last summer. So.
And so you get to, you were invited, you said, to Le Cordon Bleu. So tell us how that happens.
Well, so they had just started. It was the first year that they were trying to put this program together, this wine management program, and now they're on their third year. And so they kind of reached out to people. I mean, they didn't have much of a website or anything, and I started looking online about, you know, for programs, and I found one in Italy that was 3 months. And then I just happened upon this program, and I called them, and I had taken French all the way through school, but I was in no means fluent at that point.
It's very different when you're actually talking to French people.
Oh, yes. I could read and write it, but I'm telling you, I could not understand what they were saying to me. But anyway, so I found that program and just kind of fell into it again, kind of this crazy moment. And they, you know, you had to apply and you had to have essays and do all those things. And they really want this program to be international. It's students from all over the world and from all different levels, people changing careers, people, you know, not just college level or age students. So really purely by accident, I ended up finding it.
Well, it didn't sound like it was an easy program by any means. You had to spend, I believe, a month as a cellar rat, and you spent about 6 months as an intern. So tell us a little bit about what was involved on that program. I imagine a lot of life insights during that period for you.
Absolutely. I think I quit probably every day for about 3 months coming into March. You know, I was tired. It was cold. The weather was bleak. And my three children and my fiance and my parents and my family back home kept saying, if you say this one more time, maybe you should just quit. And that was the impetus for me to keep going. I went, oh, gosh. They're taking me seriously. I'm not quitting. No way. So, yes, so 3 weeks into the program, we started in September. 3 weeks, they take the whole class and they move you out. You study winemaking, and then you go out for a month and you work in a winery that they place you at. So I went with a girl from Finland who, just lovely person, and we ended up at a family in, I can't remember exactly where it was, somewhere in the Bordeaux region, but it didn't work out well. We were supposed to go with a couple other women there who were going to be working and harvesting, and it turned out to be 8 men and us. So my professor said, don't call me before 8 in the morning or after 8 p.m. So we spent one night with our room barricaded, and I called him on the cell phone at 8:01, and I said, you must get us out. So he got us a ticket, and we moved to Bergerac, which is where his best friend was. And they already had 2 girl students there. So we had another girl from Turkey and then a French girl. And their big joke, they were the nicest people in the world, and we worked really hard, a very small winery, so we got to do a lot of things hands-on. But they made jokes about, you know, listen, we asked your professor to give us 2 strong men, and we got 4 girls. So, and then I also had to work in a restaurant, which was frightening, as you can imagine. It was on the Champs-Élysées, and I had to speak French to the clients, and I had to pick their wines. And very high-end restaurant. So, that was an experience as well.
Yeah.
Working, you know, going to work at 6 p.m. at night and not being done till 2 in the morning, you know, that was not my thing. I did that in college, but it's like, oh, no, I can't do this anymore and sleep half the day. So that was a rude awakening as well. But, you know, in the end, we really learned everything that we possibly could about wine at that point.
Right. Well, you say on your blog there was a moment when your vision comes clear to you. You were walking along with your professor. It was a professor. Mm-hmm. And he says, you're writing a book about wine growing, and you know about wine. Why are you here? And you say to him, I'm here because I realize that I and California and the world of American wine do not know everything there is to know about wine because we're just too young. I want to take the old world of wine back to the new world and teach what I've learned. But I also know from reading the book that you also wanted to bring it back a little differently. So talk to us about your perspective on that, Paula.
Yes. You know, I wanted to keep things that I personally believe in. The system in France is so very different as far as growing grapes and all the traditions that they do. I mean, they harvest 100 days after the end of bloom, and like we don't harvest here until our sugars and our acids and our pHs are at the levels that we want them to be. So I would never want to change this system over here because I feel that we have more freedom. They don't irrigate, so they have to deal with things like that. We do irrigate here. We do more cover cropping. They do a lot of organic and biodynamic, which, of course, I support. So in the farming aspect, there were a lot of differences, and I still follow the protocols of what I've learned here in California. But they didn't fight the system with me. They loved hearing about what we do here, but they can't change their system. I mean, they're mandated by other sources that they have to follow the old traditions. But as far as wine tasting and wine making, I think that they are so incredible with their techniques. And that's basically what I'm doing now, is trying to educate people here on really how to taste wine and how to pick wine, and you know, the experience of learning wine on yourself instead of the people. I believe that the people should be shaping the market of wine, not the other way around. And so my goal is to teach people how to do that. And I really learned that from the French.
Interesting. Well, it's a good segue, because when we come back, I'm going to ask you a question leading on from that. So please do stay with us. You're listening to Paula Moulton. Her book is called Seasons Among the Vines, Life Lessons from the California Wine Country and Paris. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We'll be right back.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live, asking you to please go to 1150kknw.com and complete the 2014 listener survey. Your confidential responses help me and other hosts produce the kind of programming you prefer. As a thank you for providing feedback, your name will be entered to win a trip for two to majestic Victoria, BC. So please go to 1150kknw.com and tell us what you'd like to hear more of.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to NuPro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, June 29th, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. It's also a Kathy and Christy Sunday. Kathy in the studio, Christy reporting from across the country. Kathy will check on all of our regulars, plus Peggy Kaler from West Star Mortgage and Cowgirl Spirit joins her in the studio. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, talk radio to help you live well, live strong. And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. I was just thinking, I hope I can remember the question I was going to lead with here, because we were so busy chatting during the break. My guest is Paula Moulton, her book, Seasons Among the Vines, talking about her life lessons from the California wine country and from her experiences in Paris at wine management school. So the question that I wanted to lead on with Paula from that was, you say that you often wondered where your fetish for wine came from. So where did it come from?
Well, so when I was growing up, you know, as a pretty young child, my dad and my uncle around, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas would always talk about wine, and they started actually making wine in the 70s. But really, my uncle was a paratrooper and was dropped in Normandy in World War II, and he used to tell stories about, you know, marching for 4 months looking for the American troops, because he survived, and that the French had fed him wine and cheese. And so as a child, that's what I heard, you know, the French, wine, cheese.
Right.
And then, of course, my parents went back to France in the early 50s. My dad was in the Army and went to college at University of Washington in Seattle, actually, and they grew up in Seattle. So they went there in their early 20s, and they were based somewhere near Normandy, and they had for a year. And so they had a real love for wine as well. So just as a child growing up around that in the early 60s, I think it just made an impact. It was kind of subliminal, you know.
Right.
I really didn't know. And then in college, I went to France and lived in Provence for a semester. And that's really where I got hooked on the whole farming and wine and the whole life.
Oh, I can tell you, my sister and I, when we were in our early 20s, spent a glorious summer in the south of France. And we lived off nothing but wine, cherries, and cheese.
So you know the story. Yes.
Oh, dear.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about wine, because you say anybody can grow their own vines. So what do we have to look for, and give us a couple of tips around getting started if we're interested in doing that?
Okay, so it just depends on where you are in the country, number one. I talk about that. I break that down in the book. But I guess, my biggest tip would be you can do it no matter where you are, except for maybe Alaska. But you just have to have different protocols for how you grow your grapes. And that's really it. And I teach you about what you're looking for and what you need depending upon where you're from. So, I go into the beginning of, taking an empty mayonnaise jar and testing your soils in your backyard and finding out, in a 24-hour period what the breakdown is. There's a little formula that you use. And so you can start by yourself, and you really don't need that much. Grapevines aren't that expensive depending upon where you are, of course. But so that's really the bottom line. The protocols change from wherever you are. And, of course, if you're in Arizona, you're going to need more water. And if you're in Florida, you're going to need less, or Seattle, or, wherever. So, but that would be my advice.
Yeah. And so let's look at a couple of food wine pairings that maybe are a little, that are uniquely Paula Moulton.
Okay, uniquely Paula Moulton. Well, I talk about this story in the book. I think that, you should go with whatever you feel like at the moment. And I happen to think that wine kind of follows the seasons. So in other words, in the summer, you really want something crisp and dry and cool. And, that's rosé and some of the whites. And then in the winter, you feel like something heavy and hearty. So I did what we call a wine analysis in front of Chateau Margaux, which is a very, very traditional step-by-step process. You only get like 7 or 8 minutes to do it. And at the end, traditionally in France with a Chateau Margaux, a wine like that, you're gonna pair it with lamb and a heavy, rosemary, potatoes, and whatever. So I did that because I knew I had to win my points for that. But then I said, and then I would serve it with a lovely pizza with caramelized onions and gorgonzola cheese. And you should have seen the faces drop in the class. So I really do believe that Chateau Margaux could really go with pizza.
Right. Well, you know what? I took a wine tasting course a long time ago, nothing like you took, obviously. It's a wine tasting class. And they told us the best food to have with champagne is French fries.
I know. Isn't that funny? Yeah, because the salt with the sort of, acidic sort of tongue, whatever, sour, or whatever you want to call it, not super sweet, unless it's a sweet champagne, but yeah, it's a good pairing. I mean, when I talk about pairing and I teach it, I say there are two things you can do. You can go with similars or you can go with opposites. And if you just keep that mindset when you're looking at wine and you're thinking about food, okay, do I want to do something similar to this dish that I'm serving, or do I want to actually do something opposite?
Right.
And so Those are the ways that I teach people first with just that concept. And then, of course, I go into more detail on what that really means.
Right. So it all sounds, very glamorous. A lot of hard work, I know, you've put under your belt. You write a lot now. You talk to people a lot. Tell us what a typical day looks like for you.
Oh, right now. Well, I don't have any vineyard land right now. So now I'm really more on the education side. So I'm trying to write more and to educate people more. So that's my typical day, doing writing, doing radio shows, speaking in front of groups. I actually do some wine judging. And I love all those things. I mean, I've spent 25 years studying this stuff. I can't just sit around and not use what I know.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I know your views over the years have changed on the ecology, land, and how animals fit into the ecology. Talk to us a little bit about that, if you would.
Can you sort of elaborate?
Initially you thought you couldn't have, you know, it had to be totally pest-free. You couldn't have any bunnies around.
Yeah. So, yeah, of course. I mean, so now my concept with that is, listen, we have to live here with animals, okay? I mean, that's just the way the world is. So if you provide a host for the animal, then the animal will leave your grapes alone. So, you know, a big thing, reason why we plant roses next to our grapevines is, to be honest, for, you know, powdery mildew, black spot, whatever. But the other reason is that the deer prefer roses over grapes. So, and, you know, it's a constant sort of game with the animals. I mean, you're trying to respect their environment, but also keep them from eating your crop once it's ready to be harvested. So, but it seems to work. I mean, the tricks that we do now, they seem to work.
Yeah. And so you told me when we started, you're heading out to New York. Are you teaching out there? What are you doing out in New York?
I'm actually taking a little bit of a break, and then I'm taking a wine trip to Italy. So from there. Yeah, you know, so it's really, my husband and I never took a honeymoon, and because we were so busy with our work. So this will actually be 1 year that we've been married, and we're finally taking our honeymoon, and that's what we're doing. We're going to study wine in Italy.
Yeah. Awesome. So looking back, I know you say in the book, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Would you have done anything differently? Do you feel that, you know, everything's come to where it should come to?
Yes, I absolutely do. I mean, I think it's always hard, and you always second guess yourself. And, you know, because I was a grape grower selling my grapes to the wineries for a while, and then I went into sort of winemaking, and then I was also writing at the same time, it was kind of like a teaching. I need to pick something now that I can focus on. I can't do all these things anymore. So, but that road to get here has given me the knowledge that I've needed to put all of this together and really feel like I can talk about it, and I know every aspect. Or, you know, of course I'm learning every day, but at least I'm to that level now that I wasn't at when I started in the 90s. Trellis systems, we were crazy with trellis systems then. We were following the Australian trellis systems, and now we've decided in California, no way, we're sort of back to the traditional French style. So, yeah.
Why is that?
Because the Australian soils are different. They have a lot of vigor over there. So basically we thought, oh, this is so great. We're going to have these incredible, like these crazy named, you know, Geneva Double Curtain and da, 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 da. And, but to train your vines to get up to that point, they have to go up like 5 feet, you know? And so you waste all that time, you know, not having a crop. And, you know, we're trying to cut back. I mean, we don't have the vigor that they have in Australia. So we really can't use the same trellis systems. Now, France has less vigor and less things that we have. So we're sort of in moderation with that. We're somewhere in between.
Interesting. So looking back, what do you know now as the expert on this? What do you know now that you wish you'd known 20 years ago or on life in general?
Wow. I'd say that, you know, I know people say this all the time, but, and I have to remind myself of it every day, that change is just inevitable, and that although I've tried to hold on to the things that I once had, it just isn't possible. And so I feel that, you know, moving forward each day, no matter what place that takes you, even if it's just a small baby step, is the way that I have to be now. And I don't think I understood that 20 years ago.
Right. I do think sometimes that takes a long time to learn.
Wisdom.
Yeah. A final, it's hindsight, right? As you said, 2020. So, but when we're almost at the end of our segment, but what's the final word you'd like to leave our listeners with today?
Well, you know what? I think that just pay attention to things around you in nature and the seasons and what the seasons do and the changes that the seasons have, because I think they affect how we feel. I mean, in the summer, you want to run around till 10 o'clock at night because it's light out. In the winter, you want to go to bed at 5 when it's dark. So don't fight that. You know, it's natural.
It is natural, and we have sadly lost it. We really have.
Yeah.
And so listeners can find you at paulamoulton.com, correct?
Yes.
And the book is called Seasons Among the Vines, Life Lessons from the California Wine Country and Paris. Paula Moulton, pleasure speaking with you today. Thanks for sharing some of your story with us.
And you too as well. Thanks so much.
And please do stay with us. We'll be right back. We're going to talk with Dr. Jeffrey Bland about the disease delusion. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. This is Vicky St. Clair with Conversations Live, asking you to please go to 1150kknw.com and complete the 2014 listener survey. Your confidential responses help me and other hosts produce the kind of programming you prefer. As a thank you for providing feedback, your name will be entered to win a trip for two to majestic Victoria, BC. So please go to 1150kknw.com and tell us what you'd like to hear more of.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Ever wonder what you are really capable of? Scientists tell us we use only 20% of our brains. Explore the frontiers of consciousness, body, and spirit with me, Ajayan Boris, host of Mind Matters, right here on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, Monday afternoons from 1 to 2. Your mind does matter. Set it free and unleash the 80% of your brain you don't use. Mondays from 1 to 2. Mind Matters Radio is part of the Healthy You Radio Network. Find us at healthyyouradio.com.
Coming up next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Tina Welling on developing a creative partnership with nature, and Seattle's New York Times bestselling author Steve Martini shares a peek into a special project with some of America's most famous writers. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, right here on KKNW AM 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net. And welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And I'm going to bring you an interview I did with Dr. Jeffrey Bland in just a moment, but let me tell you a little bit about him. He's actually been called the godfather of functional medicine, which was said by Dr. Mehmet Oz. He's actually been on the cutting edge of functional medicine for decades. He says that what we call disease is a result of an imbalance in one or more of seven core physiological processes. And his new book outlines that science, not just the science, it outlines about what we can do about that too. So let me give him a proper formal introduction here. Dr. Bland is a biochemist by training. He was the first member of the Board of Trustees for Bastia University in 1980, the first accredited school of naturopathic medicine in the U.S., which we have right up here, of course, in Seattle. And Dr. Bland founded the Institute for functional medicine as well as the Personalized Lifestyle Medicine Institute. He's written widely on a range of subjects and has been guest on hundreds of radio and TV interview shows. His monthly audio magazine, Functional Medicine Update, reaches over 100,000 practitioners worldwide. And as I said at the beginning of the show, in the course of his work, he's traveled more than 6 million miles around the world talking with various scientists and leading medical professionals. And just to reiterate, his book is called The Disease Delusion, Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, and Happier Life. So, Dr. Bland, your whole work in this book, the whole work that you do is based on the body's core physiological processes working together. And if they do, you say we have a healthy, functioning body. So I'm interested how you got into biochemistry and why you find this so fascinating.
Well, thank you. You know, about 25 years ago, after having been a medical school professor and a researcher and involved with clinical work, I got together with a variety of my medical colleagues and research colleagues to do a three-day kind of retreat in which we had a whiteboard and asked what would the optimal healthcare system look like. And what we recognized is that we had a very sophisticated and still, you know, do have a very sophisticated disease care system. And if you're in a traumatic situation or a crisis illness, you would want to be so in the United States. The technology we have, the doctors we have, the surgery pharmacology, it's just amazing. But with that said, 75% or more of our healthcare expenditures now are really delivering care to chronic illness for which there is no single pill that's going to treat type 2 diabetes or heart disease or arthritis or dementia. So we asked the question, how would we go from this kind of a very high scale of disease care to a healthcare model that would basically be able to beat back the rising tide of chronic illness? And out of that came the recognition that the literally thousands of papers that have been published in the medical and science literature on chronic illness could be distilled down into seven core physiological processes that, when they're imbalanced, results in these array, literally hundreds of different diseases of chronic diseases. So trying to make the story simpler, what we finally recognize is if we could understand what causes these seven core physiological processes to be imbalanced, we could then treat the cause rather than the effect. And from that was born the Institute for Functional Medicine, which over the last 25 years, I'm happy to say about 100,000 physicians have gone through this training and program and are now implementing these concepts successfully in their practice for the management of chronic illness. And I wanted to make that information accessible to the average healthcare consumer so they would really see what's going on, because a lot of people feel that there's no way that they can properly manage these conditions. But this provides, I think, a very acceptable approach.
Right. And you talk about, I mean, the book, title of the book is The Disease Delusion. Tell us what you mean by that, because you talk about chronic illnesses and we're in this chronic illness conundrum versus the disease delusion. So why the disease delusion? That's quite a tongue twister.
Thank you. That is a tongue twister. Yeah, I had to say it about 50 times before I could get it down. But, you know, it is, the title seems very contradictory. Why would I say there's a delusion about diseases? Because we know diseases exist. Well, it's not that the delusion is about the existence of disease. It's about the delusion of the origin. And we, most of us, have this belief that these diseases, like heart disease or diabetes or arthritis, are genetically related to a connection to our mothers or fathers through our genetic inheritance, and therefore there's little we can do about them. You know, we've got to use whatever heroic measures are required to manage the symptoms, because our genes are got arthritis in them or heart disease or breast cancer or whatever it might be. And that was a kind of an observed, accepted truth until the Human Genome Project was completed and the code of our life was deciphered in 2000. And then suddenly, the revolution in thinking that's now really transformed healthcare is that only about, I'll say 20 to 25% at most of these diseases are hardwired to our genes, meaning 75 to 80% of these diseases don't come specifically from a gene, but come from the way that our lifestyle, diet, environment, activity patterns influence the expression of our genes. And within our genes are multiple stories. These stories of life can either be bliss stories that are good health stories, or they can be Greek tragedy, which are disease stories. And it depends on how we're receiving information that then accesses our genes to create the outcome called our health or disease. This is a very positive story, because where we can't change our genes themselves, we can change the way the genes are read and how they express their message by sending the right signals that are personalized to our own individual need. This is the new medicine of the 21st century. This will transform healthcare. This will reduce the burden of a reducible disease that is bringing the country's economy to its knees. And this will free people up throughout the course of their living to have high-level health so they can enjoy the latter part of their years of life. And I think this is the model that hopefully we're going to get across through the disease delusion that puts it in the hands of people who need it.
Exactly. We as consumers going to our doctors have to make sure that we are getting the treatment that we want, not just the treatment that's delivered. So you talk about five questions that we should ask our doctor to see if their focus is based on health care rather than disease care. Share a couple of those with us, if you would.
Yes, I think the first and overridingly most important question, and if this one is answered affirmatively, then the other four questions are easy. And that question is asking our physician, primary care provider, be it a female or male, are they interested in knowing something about our, as a patient's, lifestyle, genetic history, family history, dietary patterns, activity patterns, environmental exposures? And if the answer to that question is no, so that the doctor says, well, no, that's not important for me to know, or I don't have the time to really ask that question, then what we know almost immediately is that that doctor is strictly focused on diagnosing a disease and treating a disease. And that is great if we have a crisis disease to manage. But that is not the kind of doctor that's probably going to be worried about developing a comprehensive health program for us that's personalized to our need. Because in the absence of asking those questions and taking that information in, it's impossible to develop a proper health program that's personalized to our need.
Right.
Most likely what will happen is we'll get a program that's one size fits all, treating the average, and each individual patient is not average. They're unique to their own needs. And that's what we've tried to describe in the Disease Delusion book, is to how do you assess your own individual needs. We've got a series of 8 questionnaires that we've developed over the last 30 years that help a person to kind of ask the right questions about themselves so they'll be able to get the right answers.
Right, and I just want to mention this. We only have a few minutes left here, but the book is somewhat interactive because you have created icons. This is a hard copy cover that I have here, but you can scan your phone over certain icons to get what information?
What happens is, as a person fills out their questionnaire, you scan over that questionnaire in the book. It goes to a website that scores a questionnaire, and it tells you back where you might want to focus your individual focus to help guide you through the book into the right places for your own individual need.
Right. And so a final thought that you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Dr. Bland?
Well, I think the most important thought, and the one that really stimulated me to spend the time to write this book, is that there is such a burden of chronic illness that steals from us our energy, our vitality, and puts us in pain and reduces our ability to fully enjoy life. It's totally reducible, preventable, if we just implement an appropriate personalized program. And I think the medicine of the 21st century will be a very different medicine from that of the 20th century, where the medicine of the 20th century was medicine for the average. The medicine of the 21st century is medicine for the individual. And in this particular book, I really talk about how a person can implement this extraordinary discovery, this revolution that's occurring right now in their daily lives to improve their function and reduce these unnecessary chronic ailments for which they seem to be unable to escape. So to me, this is the advocacy from which the book is written, and I hope it will provide to the reader tools that will really be tools to use to improve their health immediately.
Right. Well, the book is called The Disease Delusion, Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer and Happier Life by Dr. Jeffrey S. Bland. And I know you have mentored some of the greats, and I appreciate you taking time with us today. Thanks, Dr. Bland.
Well, thank you. What a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
And, of course, we obviously pre-recorded that interview because of Dr. Bland's schedule. But he's based up here in Seattle. And, you know, his work makes sense to me. Really has tipped up conventional wisdom, as we thought, you know, 70% of your illnesses are down to your genes. And he's tipped, not just he, but people in functional medicine have tipped that upside down. And so I just want to reiterate, there are eight questions in the book, or he basically goes over if you have an iPhone, if you have a, I believe it works with Android too, but you can go and scan those questionnaires. And you can also go to his website, which is drjeffreybland.com, and take those questionnaires. So you can have a little bit of insight into what you think is going on before you go and have that conversation with your doctor that we talked about. And again, his name is Dr. Jeffrey Bland. The book, The Disease Delusion, Conquering the Causes of Chronic Illness for a Healthier, Longer, and Happier Life. And I just want to take a couple of minutes here before we shoot off today. You're probably sick of hearing this. But KKNW is having its annual 2014.
It helps you. Yeah, it helps you out the most.
It does. And the 2014 survey, and it really does help us, me as a host, select the programming that you prefer. So I really please ask you, go if you can to 1150kknw.com. The survey is running through July 6th. And just jump on there and fill out the survey and learn about the contest that's associated with the survey. That is a Victoria trip, expenses paid. And the way it helps me is, you know, we think if we don't hear from you, we're kind of guessing at what kind of programming works for you. And I'm doing what I like, which is not a bad thing. But ultimately, this is about you. So we need to hear from you. And the more information you can give us, the more concise information you can give us, the better it is for us when we're sitting down programming future shows and guests. You know, the kinds of what we want to hear are the kind of topics you want, the kind of guests you want, and certainly we'll be very responsive to that. So I please ask you, go to 1150 KKNW, jump on there, do the survey. Just takes a little minute. It's totally confidential. If you do choose to leave your email address, you'll be automatically entered into the contest trip for that trip for two to Victoria, BC. And we've had a very special guest in the studio with us today. Here, Mr. Taylor.
Oh, thank you.
I have to thank Taylor. I was so sick last week, and you just ran with whatever we needed to do and filled in, and I really do appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you.
Since we've never worked together before, that was especially...
I appreciate the opportunity to edit your show for last
there
week.
There you so. Grow. And, of course, he's been keeping us live on the air today. So I guess that's about it for today. We'll be back next week. Same time, same place. And you can find out more about us at conversationslive.net. You can also find us at Facebook on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. You can find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. Go figure. And I think that's about it. We've got more than 300 podcasts on our website. And we'll be back next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.